Thanks for joining us. Tonight, the growing political clout of women of color, galvanizing others across the country to get out the vote, taking action to bring about change in politics they say is overlooked and long overdue. Here's ABC's Janae Norman.
No excuses, people. When November 3rd comes, we're going to be like, We did it.
Yeah.
All of us together, we did it.
Oh, there we go.
This group of women is on a mission.
Listen, politics is boring.
As the music blasts, they're blasting out thousands of text messages to women of color living in key battleground states. Their message, vote.
Oh, I hit 1,000! Woo! I got a power thumb.
Oh, that's so cool.
We're having a national Text Out the Vote Day. There's 600 women from 38 states participating in today's event.
How many did you get?
1,000!
4,000!
Leading the charge is Amy Allison, the founder of a group called She the People, which has launched what she says is the first national voter mobilization effort focused exclusively on women of color.
I'm going to tell you something right now. Women of color can make this happen.
We have never had in this country a strategic and targeted effort to reach women of color. And yet women of color are the critical vote. This is the moment.
Women of color are the fastest growing voting bloc in the country. Allison believes they could prove pivotal in delivering Democrats a definitive victory.
Looking at the data from 2016, it's clear that women of color have a decisive role to play in the 2020 election. Just take Michigan, for example. Trump won the state by 10,000, and women of color who did not vote, over 205,000 people. In Pennsylvania, Trump won by 44,000, yet women of color who did not cast a vote, 268,000. Finally, in Texas, Trump won Texas in 2016 by 807,000 votes. Women of color, eligible but didn't vote, over 2 million.
I accept your nomination.
While the history-making nomination of Kamala Harris generated excitement among many women of color, it's actually the down-ballot races that could impact who wins at the top of the ticket.
The down-ballot races fuel the organizing, it fuels the issues, the conversations with the community that drive higher turnout.
This year, a record 115 women of color are running for Congress, and one of them is Candace Valenzuela in Texas.
We run on behalf of our communities to lift them up. And women of color have been doing this for years. It's just time that they now have a seat at the table.
If Valenzuela wins, she'd not only flip her Dallas area district, but she'd become the first Afro-Latina to serve in Congress.
We're seeing a lot of women of color running. What do you think is behind that?
Seeing Donald Trump in the Oval Office, I think, was a wake-up call for a lot of women who may have considered running for public office, but thought that they didn't quite have enough degrees, they didn't quite have enough qualifications. Times have been tough, but many of you here have been putting in the work to save the very fabric of this country.
Valenzuela says she never imagined she'd run for Congress one day.
When I moved out to the suburbs of Dallas, I was resigned to thinking that this was just going to be a red area and that we weren't going to see a lot of other changes.
Some argue now that Texas is a swing state. Is that what you believe?
I do. I've believed this for a couple of years now, but I've never felt it more than I do in this moment.
Texans haven't voted for a Democratic presidential candidate since Jimmy Carter, but polls show President Trump and former Vice President Biden now in a dead heat. The Lone Star State is an electoral gold mine with 38 electoral votes. If Biden pulls off a win here, Trump would have virtually no path to victory.
This is a state with a quarter of the electorate being women of color, who are the most likely Democrats, with a vote-eligible population that dwarfs the numbers that Trump won that state. It's a true battleground state.
Valenzuela's campaign hopes to drive voter turnout in the mostly suburban district she's running to represent.
My name is Candace Valenzuela, and I'm running for Congress.
Her opponent, Beth Van Dyne, is a former Trump administration official who calls herself part of a conservative squad.
I'm Beth Van Dyne. I'll never defund the police or side with criminals.
And that's why we stand with Beth Van Dyne.
Most experts rate this race as a toss-up. Some view the dueling campaigns as a battle to define the suburban vote.
Do you think that there are some misconceptions about who lives in the suburbs and who are the voters in suburbs?
There is a huge misconception. I am a soccer mom. I am a suburban mother. I am a wife in the suburbs. And what I want for my children, for my family, for my community is the safety and the prosperity that's afforded within the American promise. And the color of my skin does not change that.
The 36-year-old Valenzuela grew up on the border in El Paso, Texas. Her Mexican-American mother met her black father in the Army. Valenzuela's childhood wasn't always easy.
I learned growing up that not all homes have four walls.
We lived in a homeless shelter on relatives' couches, and at one point ended up living in a kiddie pool outside of a gas station with my mom. But we were able to get things together through some key programs. We received housing through HUD. We received food stamps to keep us fed, and public education became a home for us. But when I think about my dream, going to college, becoming an educator, there was so much hard work, but there was also so much luck. And when you're working hard and you're doing everything that you're supposed to do, luck shouldn't give you a stable life.
Good job.
The mom of two has shifted to mainly virtual campaigning because of the pandemic. And as Election Day draws near, the fact that she could make history is not lost on her.
What would you hope that you, being in Congress, would say to other people who looked like you or young kids who looked like you growing up?
That the halls of government is theirs. I know that people may know this intellectually, but they don't feel it viscerally. And I want them to know deep down that this is their country too.
So I picked up my mom, and we are going to go and drop off her ballot.
This is it. We're here. We arrived at the polling place.
Already more than 7 million people have voted early in Texas.
So this is the line. It's 8:30, still wrapped around the building.
It inspires me to just see all of these individuals here out for early voting.
A record-shattering number in a state that's made it more difficult to vote in the last 4 years and traditionally has low turnout.
Getting close to the front of the line. I've been in this line for about 40 minutes.
I am heading inside to go and vote.
Across Texas, about 650,000 more women of color have voted at this point in the election compared to in 2016, according to She the People.
I'm voting for women's rights. I'm also really excited to vote for my sorority sister, Kamala Harris. So today I'm wearing my pearls and I'm getting ready to stroll to the poll.
Go get your tias, your abuelas, your family members, your mujeres, and bring them out to vote.
As an African American woman, today is very special to me. Out of everything that I think that our foreparents have gone through, I'm determined to make my vote count.
Hey, hello, everyone. Yes.
With a growing chorus of voices making themselves heard this year, Amy Allison hopes the impact will stretch far beyond Election Day.
What we're doing is we're diffusing centuries-old practice, prioritizing white guy vote and interests over everybody else, because we want a equal share of the society and we want to govern. And 2020 is a year where so much of that is coming together. We're helping lead the country into a new era.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer.
We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
From the pews and the pulpits, one summer camp is preaching acceptance and practicing love thy neighbor around campfires, spreading their message of unity when so much seems to be divided in America. So what can we all learn from them? Here's my Nightline co-anchor Byron Pitts with this turning point story.
Here in southern Kentucky, where heaven meets the hillside, there's horseback riding, boating, even the blob. But these activities are simply appetizers to the real entree. Some have called a radical experiment that's been going on in these mountains almost 20 years.
Good job.
We are very focused on diversity.
Barefoot Republics are placed with an audacious idea that racial reconciliation can happen at summer camp. The process is simple. Bring kids and families together from different backgrounds, different races, different ethnicities, in hopes of fostering life-changing relationships. Tommy Rhodes is Barefoot Republic's founder.
Being barefoot is really a spiritual posture, and if all you can see is somebody's feet, you know, you don't know if they're a prince or a pauper.
The camp is a reflection of Tommy's own life experience.
And so I grew up in a Japanese-American family in a small town in Alabama where it's all black and white. And I just felt like I didn't really fit in, and I experienced just a lot of racism, a lot of prejudice. I didn't know how God was going to utilize my story, and just all those experiences he gave me, you know, have kind of applied to this mission today.
The camp is also unabashedly Christian. Tommy says their camp tries to reflect what they believe heaven will eventually look like.
Barefoot's mission, you know, is certainly Christ-centered, and we're very upfront about that. But we're also very upfront about inviting others into it. We feel like the gospel is reconciliation. And so this whole idea of bringing people together from different backgrounds, we feel like that's what Jesus modeled for us.
In August, amidst the pandemic, the Sabre family joined 9 other families for a weekend at Barefoot, a much smaller version of the usual camp.
I am excited to come to Barefoot.
Kayvon is of Persian descent. His wife, Annie, was born in Taiwan, and they have 3 little girls. Diversity is woven into their life.
We live in a neighborhood that's predominantly Caucasian, and so when I look at my daughter's sort of classroom yearbook photo, for example, and see that every other child is fully Caucasian, I think, wow, my daughter's missing out.
I think there's something really powerful about being taken out of your normal and coming together and meeting someone and hearing their stories.
I have a lot of people that come alongside me and just say, Tommy, I'm so excited about your mission. You know, I've always taught my kids to be colorblind. I just like have this pit in my stomach when I hear that. And I'm just thinking, wow, you know, God created us to see color. God actually created the color, you know, and for us not to see and acknowledge our differences, you know, we're missing out on so much of creation. The opportunity we have at Barefoot is to come together and not be colorblind, but just to acknowledge how beautiful this world is that God has given us.
Thomas Rose is Barefoot's Director of Community Relations. He sees this moment as an inflection point.
What's happening right now, when we look at George Floyd and incidences like that, you know, Ahmaud Arbery, it breaks my heart
that happened first and foremost. I'm glad that we're looking at these situations now the way that we are, because for the first time ever, I believe that everybody's eyes have been open to see that there is an issue. There still is a racial issue in this country.
He says that for too long, churches across America have shrunk away from issues of race.
If we believe what the Bible says, if we believe who Jesus was, then we should be the ones leading the charge when it comes to loving and tearing down the wall of racism. But I feel like we aren't the ones. I feel like we kind of always follow in later. We have to wake up.
When Barefoot started in 2002, I mean, one of our biggest challenges was attracting campers that were affluent and that were white. There was a lot of fear associated with sending your kids, you know, to a place where they were going to be in the minority. And we feel like it's just kind of turning the tables upside down a little bit.
It's been great to get to know other families that kind of focus on the same thing that I do.
The Dem Schroeder family have been coming to Barefoot for years. For 14-year-old Molly, a camp regular, this moment in the country has been eye-opening.
So I didn't really recognize that there was a problem until people kind of started speaking out about it. And it's really kind of changed my perspective on what a lot of people go through that I don't see and I don't understand, because I have the privilege of not having to go through all that stuff.
It's heightened our awareness. We could do more. We could do better. It's more than just, I'm going to accept you. It's, no, I need you, right? I need your perspective to make me better, and vice versa.
For campers, it teaches them that people that may not look like them can actually be really good lifelong friends.
It's campers turned counselors like Megan Davis, who first came to the camp in 2006.
I'm struck when you talk about Barefoot, you clutch your chest as if you're talking about a relative.
Yes, it's very dear to my heart.
She attended Barefoot for 6 years.
So I think what I liked about Barefoot, what I remember from being a camper, is that you're not the majority in the room, right?
She's then carried her experience as a camp counselor into her career. Megan now works at a juvenile hall in Orange County, California, with kids who are incarcerated.
How did your experience at Barefoot Camp influence the woman you would become?
I've always loved working with kids. Barefoot kind of prepared me to know that, like, there's a spectrum of trauma that people experience. There's a spectrum of normalcy that people experience. But there's also always opportunities just to be really present with people and to love them. But when you're actually, like, showing up and consistent and there for them, it can change their life.
How relevant do you think Barefoot Camp is, can be, will be in this current climate in America, where we're in the midst of this, what many are calling this racial reckoning?
I think about the issues. How do I advocate for people who do not look like me? How do I actually make a difference instead of being someone who's talking about making a difference?
For the families here, this camp can be a model, a society where all faces and all faiths can feel at home.
When I think about a just society, I think about the design for humanity, the design for life, the heaven that many of us look forward to. And I think it's going to look like Barefoot. You're going to have at the same table black and brown and white and really every sort of color under the sun gathering around the table for love.
Civic reminder, Election Day is next Tuesday. For information on how you can cast your ballot, check out the How to Vote page on 538.com. That's Nightline. You can find our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here tomorrow, same time. Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, America.